We're actually going to skip the order. We're going to talk today about Elokai Neshama. We're going to dedicate this year and the learning this morning for the ones who are to Refuah Shlema, Meira, Chlama Meira, that she should have a healthy and speedy and safe and happy recovery. Chaya Esther Bat Sara. Okay? And if you guys remind me, we'll say Kvitl Tehillim also after Mincha. So, maybe just first quickly to do a review of where we're up to. We said that tefillah is not prayer, right? Prayer means to beg. It means I'm nothing, you're everything. Change your mind, change the verdict. We believe that tefillah is something entirely different, right? Rav Kook suggests Yaakov Avinu is on his deathbed. He sees Yosef, he says, Ra'ofa nechalo pilalti, I never palled, I would ever see your face. Rashi says, Lo milani libi lachshov ki erecha shuv. I never imagined I would see you again, never wished, never wanted, never dreamed. Lehit palel, the reflexive, something I do to and for myself. And therefore, lehit palel is to struggle with what I want. What do I want? Why do I want it? Does Hashem want me to want this? We said that tefillah is a gift. It's a bit of a mystery. Why does one person have one ratzon, another person have another ratzon? If you can tap into what your ratzon is, and tap into what Hashem, the ratzon, the will that Hashem gave you, you're tapping into, you know, what it is we're doing here. And that's why Rav Kook says that neshama, tefillah mevakeshet me'aneshama tafkida, the tefillah allows us to tap into what our real purpose is. We said that we don't daven three times a day. Haneshama betefillah matmedet, we're in a constant state of tefillah. We said, you know, we don't have a soul, we are a soul, I am a soul. And the essence of the soul is ratzon, right? The essence of the soul is what I want. And therefore, wanting is tapping into my ratzon. We said, enom din litbal mitoch etzev. Right? You can't experience tefillah from a state of etzev, of sadness, right? Of pain, right? Sadness is the opposite of happiness. Happiness is all about purpose, okay? And therefore, etzev is the lack of purpose or loss of purpose, right? And therefore, in order to get into a state of tefillah where I can tap into sort of purpose and joy, I have to get beyond that state of challenge and sadness or whatever. And that, we said, was the whole process. And then we started going through Berakot HaShachar, and we said that we want to be modani, we want to be a state of gratitude, to be a modan. You know, start your day with what you're grateful for. The second word in the day is ani. We're still not talking about God. If I don't have a healthy relationship with myself, I can't really have a really healthy relationship with Hashem, let alone anybody else. Who am I? What is it that I have to give to the world? Will the world be better for the fact that I'm here? To be in a state of lefanecha, to be before Hashem, to know that Hashem runs the world. And we concluded that discussion with the fact that Hashem is bechemla. Hashem gives us so much more than we could ever imagine and ever deserve. Rabbi munatecha, that your faith is just beyond our comprehension. Whose faith? Hashem's faith, right? Hashem's faith in us. The fact that we're here means Hashem believes that we're capable. We talked about al netila yadayim. We said that it doesn't say al rechitza. It says al netila, to take. The hands that I have in this world are the vehicles for what I want to accomplish. It's not just about what I do, but how I do and why I do. We talked about asher yatzar, the difference between yitzirah and briah. Briah is yesh me'ayin, that's all God. Yitzirah is putting it all together in the right way. That's Hashem modeling for us. We talked about, you know, the hollow spaces and perforations, what comes out of the body, what comes in. You have to get rid of your stuff before you're ready to make a difference in the world, right? Let go of the trash in your life, whatever that is. We talked about the Birchot HaTorah. We talked about La'asok B'divrei Torah, that Torah has to be an esek, it has to be who you are and what you do, and not just a subject, you know, in the day. We talked about the difference between Noten HaTorah, Nitina, and Lilamed Torah L'Amo Yisrael, right? Teaching and giving. The fact that Torah is constantly coming into my life, that Torah is the recipe for what it is I'm meant to be doing here. Do I feel a dialogue with Hashem in my learning, right, etc. And now we're gonna take a brief discussion, but we're gonna skip because I wanted to. I wanted to get to a discussion that we could sort of have in one day. And then we'll go back to the Mishnah of Keren Keimek Lama Ba. So, Elokai, Nishama Shenatata Bi Tehorai. This is an unbelievable bracha. It's unbelievable, right? Just out of curiosity, anybody here ever think about the words of this bracha? No? Really? Wow. This is, yeah? Okay, cool. So we'll see where you got to. This is an unbelievable bracha. So let's just take a look at that line. Okay, I'll say it again. And let's hear what your questions are. What do you think we have to do? Elokai, neshama shenatata bi tehorahi. First of all, how do I translate that? Elokai, my God. Okay? Right? Neshama shenatata bi. Soul that you gave into me. Tehorahi is tahor. What do we have to do? We have to define our terms. Let's talk about the terms we have to define. What terms do we have to... Libriot. What terms do we have to define? Okay, so let's see. First of all, we spoke about the fact that there's a difference between the name Hashem and the name Elohim. Right? Now, it's interesting that whatever this tefillah is about, I'm speaking to Elokai. Second thing that's interesting. What else do you notice about that word that's not common?
It's me, not...
Yeah. It's not God, and it's not our God. It's my God. This is a very personal tefillah. What we say, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, our God. Where do we find God in the singular? Specifically relating to me. And this is something you not only know, you know it so well that you don't even know you know. Boker Tov. Come on. Where do I find Hashem, God, in the singular as it relates to me and just me? In a context that it's amazing that it's talking to me personally. I mean, there is other places, but the paradigm. Should I give you a hint? We read it in the Torah 3 weeks ago. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Now, if you remember, we said that the name Hashem, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, right, is that aspect of Hashem, or at least that's how Rav Kook understands it, not everybody understands it this way, that aspect of Hashem is beyond our comprehension. The word, right, the letters, Yud Kei Vav Kei, are the same root as Hayahu Veviyeh, which is the response that Hashem gives Moshe to tell the Jewish people when Moshe asks Hashem at the burning bush, so what should I tell the Jewish people? And they say, who sent me? Right? Moshe says to Hashem, so what do I say when they say, who sent me? Right? So Hashem says, Eya asher eya shlachani alechem. Right? Just tell them, Eya ekeya, whatever, asher eya, has sent me to you. Now pay attention to that, okay? Eheye asher eheye, I will be that I will be, which is a translation, so it's not accurate. That's a ridiculous question and a ridiculous answer. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the Jewish people, and they say, who sent you? What do you mean, who sent you? How does he even walk in? What could you say to raise that question? Hi, I'm here. You would have to say, I've come to bring you home. Why would you ask who sent you? You either believe he's a Navi, a prophet, or you don't. So that's a very strange question. And what does God answer? Just tell him I will be that I will be. Would that satisfy you? So one way, anybody want to suggest anything? One way of understanding that, if you think about it, okay, is that Moshe understands. Why do the Jewish people ask this question? Why do they ask this question? Imagine you're in Treblinka. You can't imagine, but try anyway. It's 1942. Okay, it's 1942 in Treblinka. You're on the line to the gas chamber. You've been in Treblinka for a month, which is almost impossible. And somebody walks in and says, I've come to take you home. Right? Why would you say, would you follow him? You think so? There are actually three instances of this actually happening. One in Treblinka, one in Auschwitz, and one in Sobibor. It is actually unbelievable how many people did not participate. This is the story nobody talks about in those revolts. Because, why? I mean, we tell you, we're going to take out the Nazi guards and we're going to revolt. Everybody there believes that they're going to die. They're in death camps. Why wouldn't you participate in a revolt? Because you're so immersed in servitude. You've been so crushed. Your spirit is so gone. You cannot believe that it's possible to be redeemed. That's pshat. Jewish people have been slaves for 210 years. Right? Jews, they didn't imagine that they could attack these Nazi Ubermenschen. Last week, some of us were talking about this. In the Warsaw Ghetto, Mordechai Analevich, in his diary, we have the diary of Mordechai Analevich. He was one of the leaders of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. It sits in Yad Mordechai. You can buy a copy of it. It's something worth reading. I decided to read it the month before I went to the Israeli army. And he has a line in there that's stuck in my head. The first day of the revolt, the SS, 200 SS officers, soldiers, march into the Warsaw Ghetto. They're going to give Otto Frank, who is the Reichs leader of Warsaw, of Poland, sorry, like the governor of Poland, they're going to give Hitler a birthday present, a Judenlein Poland. They're going to get rid of all the Jews in Poland. And they're going to start with Warsaw. And to their shock, the Jews fight back. And 13 Nazis are killed, and the rest retreat. It's the first instance of Jews fighting against the Nazis and winning a battle. Right? And Mordechai Analevich writes in his diary, they cry, they bleed, they scream, they even die, these Nazi Ubermenschen. Right? Like, it's unbelievable. These supermen actually can die. Now, you read that and you don't get it. Well, yeah, you shoot a guy in the head, he's going to die. They were so conditioned to the fact that these Nazi supermen were ubermenschen, they were supermen by propaganda, they didn't imagine they could die. Imagine 210 years of Jewish slavery. So they just don't believe. They just can't imagine. It's beyond their comprehension. And by the way, part of their question is not only can we fight back. Hang on one second. Guys, shit. Right? Not only is it beyond their comprehension that we can fight back, they're struggling in the pain of what are we doing here to begin with. Like, why did Hashem put us here? Why would I even want to follow a God who allows me to be in this mess, in this pain, in this agony? Like, where is God? Like, suppose Moshe walks into Auschwitz and says, I've come, God has come to redeem you. How many inmates would look at him and say, God, we left God a long time ago. So what does Hashem say? You can't answer that question. I am beyond your comprehension. I am Hayahovev Yeh. Hashem was, is, and will be. We can say that. We can't understand that. How could you possibly understand that Hashem is here and then and now and future? And you can't. Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei is that aspect of Hashem that is beyond my comprehension. This is such an important idea. Every time, by the way, why does Hashem represent Rachamim? Why does the name Hashem represent mercy? Did you ever think about that? Because Rachamim is beyond my comprehension. It doesn't make sense at its root that I would receive so much more than I deserve. Imagine if, I don't know, hopefully this doesn't exist in your head, but if it did, you know, by this time of the year, there's one person that you look at and he's in the Beis Medrash and you say, that guy is really, like, I aspire to be like that guy, whoever that guy is, in your mind, right? And then there's one guy you say, you wonder, like, I don't know, why did he come to yeshiva? Is he really going to grow this year or whatever? I don't have that attitude. But let's say you did. So let's say we took the guy who just doesn't, you don't know what he's doing here. He's missing shiurim, he's waking up late, whatever it is in your mind that would merit that sort of thought. And Dafka, we keep honoring that guy. We stand and say, this guy is unbelievable. We wish we had. So eventually you'd say, that's beyond my comprehension. And that's what Hayah, like, it doesn't make sense. We don't deserve that much in our life. That's Hashem. Elokim, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, you the individual, I did all of this for you. Because I love you. Elohim is din. Din means you get what you deserve. Justice. Right? Love without justice does not work. You have to have din. Right? So Elokecha, Elohim, is at least that aspect of Hashem I can understand. Now, if I only lived in a world of din, if I could only get what I deserve, then that'd be a terrible world to live in. Because imagine if you only gave your kids what they deserve. How much do your kids really deserve when they're born? Imagine if we would only merit what we deserve. Do we really deserve as much as we get? Think about the generation we're living in. What we've been given is beyond our comprehension. There's no way you can earn what we've been given in this world. We can spend our lives trying to earn it back. Right? So now let's get back to this here. Elokai. Why is it Elokai? Why is it Elokai? What do you think?
Because we're talking about, all about the neshama, which is, like, I guess, special to yourself. Like, it's, everyone has their own neshama, so I guess like it makes it more personal to say like my God that like instilled this neshama, like this own unique thing in me.
Oh, okay. So you're right. In order to really understand the Elohim, we have to understand the concept of the neshama. What did we say? That's why we just did a chazara. What did we say the neshama is?
Ratzon,
right? Right? We said, I don't have a soul, I am a soul. The essence of me is my ratzon. So why is it Elohim that gives me my ratzon? Because what does ratzon do? What is, when I have purpose and will, do you remember at one point we were talking about this and we were saying, if a person really could understand what he wants, if you could finish Tfilah and really have thought through those three questions, what do I want and why do I want it? Does Hashem want me to want this? And you really knew what you wanted out of your day, what would that leave you feeling?
Happy,
okay. Simcha, what else? Motivated. Right? When you really know what you want, and you think you know how to get it, that is what motivation is. Motivation is, I have a set goal, I figured out, think about it, let's say you want to diet. You want to go on a diet, but you don't know what you weigh, you just feel jlubby. You're not motivated yet. So you weigh yourself, and you find out you got to lose 40 pounds. And then you think about, how am I going to do that? I'm going to go for a run every day, and I'm going to eat less, and whatever it is. The first day, before you even start, you haven't started yet. You're still the fat jlub you were yesterday, right? But you're motivated. Why are you motivated? Because you know what you want, and you think you know how to get there. That's ratzon. And that's a gift. And by the way, the fact that Hashem gives me an individual ratzon is because Hashem loves me, because I have a personal relationship with Hashem. That has to lead you to the road of a personal relationship with Hashem. Right? Because where else does that come from besides the Kodesh Baruch Hu? Right? Only from Hashem. That's what Elohim is. Right? And to the degree that I'm able. And by the way, you know, sometimes you find a person and he's busy doing somebody else's ratzon. You meet these people. You meet him in college. The guy who's majoring in economics because his father's a businessman and he wants him to take over the family business, and one day you're having a schmooze at a Starbucks. He's like, I really don't want to go into my dad's business. And you're like, well, why are you doing? Oh, I just couldn't say no. You know, my parents have been dreaming about this. I'm the only child. I don't know. And you realize this guy is not pursuing his dream. He's pursuing somebody else's dream. That destroys you from the inside out. Right? Elokai neshama shenatata bi. Now we'll get back to natata bi. But it's tahor. Now, what does it mean that my neshama is tahor? What is tahara?
Purity.
Okay, well, fine. What is purity? Now, remember, there are two ways to understand something. One way is pshat, is to find the context or see where it appears in Tanakh and understand it. There is another way to understand it. We just did it with etzev.
Opposite.
Figure out what the opposite. What's the opposite of tahara? Tuma. Now we've talked about Tuma. What is Tuma? And don't tell me impurity, because I'll just ask you what's impurity.
Death.
Oh, Tuma is contact with death. Right? Every aspect, every time you find Tuma, it is always contact with death. A woman becomes Tumea when she's a Nida, or a man becomes Tumea when he's a Zav, when he has a seminal emission, because that's, on a certain form, the loss of potential life. Right? So Tuma is about contact with death. So what's Tahara? Contact with life. Well, what is life? Pardon? Okay. I think life is ratzon. I think the source of life, right? There are two things that we describe as the source of life. What's the source of life? What's the tree of life?
Torah.
So what does that mean? What does it mean when I'm in touch with Torah? I'm in touch with Hashem. When I learn Torah, if I do it, you know, in the way that Judaism wants me to do it, I'm tapping into the ratzon of Hashem. Right? That's why if you're studying Torah and it's not a divine work, it's just a book, then you're not tapping into life. It's not the words, right? It's the understanding of what those words are. Okay, so the neshama is tahor because the ratzon that I'm given connects me to Hashem, connects me to where I come from. Right? Now think about that line, neshama shenatata bi. This is the moment where I want to appreciate the ratzon that I have. Neshama shenatata bi. Now, what does it mean, natata bi? Why doesn't it say natata li? Right? That you gave it to me. What do you think the difference is? Efiyamin, what do you think? What's the difference between neshama shenatata bi, that you put it in me, and Neshama Shenatata Li, that I would have thought to say that you gave it to me. Not sure? What do you think?
One is B is inseparable and Li, like, it's a gift.
Oh, right? Li, yeah?
It's not something you have, it's something you are.
Exactly. Is that what you're going to say?
Similar.
Yeah, okay. When I give something to you, it's not you. There's you and there's it, right? You know, I don't know. One day I walk into the basement, there's a guy not wearing kippah. I say, I think you lost your kippah. He's like, oh, wow. So I take a spare kippah from my pocket and I give it to you. It's an object. It's separate from you. Okay? Right? When you love someone, you don't give the love to them. This is the problem with translating. Right? You give the love, right? You don't give avat to someone. Right? You love someone. Because love affects who you are. So, the neshama is not something that's separate from me. It is me. It's the essence of me. Right? Natata bi. This is me. Okay? And it has to be tahor. It is tahor. It's just a question of whether I recognize it's tahor. Do I recognize it pure? Does my ratzon connect me to my higher self, to my higher reality, to who I really am, to why I'm really here? And you're sitting in the morning, you haven't even started your day, right? And you're deeply meditating on this thought like Max, right? And, you know, you get a chance to ask yourself, what is my ratzon? Do I recognize this ratzon as a gift? You know? You're sitting in the middle of, I don't know, Yenemsveld, Dartmouth, right?
I'm waiting for
it. Yeah. And you wake up in the morning, and, I don't know, you're going to go to your philosophy class, your business economics class, okay? And you sit in the morning, and you have a chance to think about, you know, do I appreciate what I have? Like, all kidding aside, that's a bracha. It's a bracha that you're capable. It's a bracha that you're capable. It's a bracha that you were chosen to be in a university, whatever university. It's a bracha that you're able to follow the classes. It's a bracha that you have an identity. All the things that you have in your life. And maybe you wake up one morning and you say, you know, why am I studying business economics? If I'm studying business economics, I'm studying business because I really want to study business economics. And why do I want to study business economics? Because you don't want to wake up when you're 35 saying, why did I do all this? And whatever that is, and everybody has to come up with their own recipe, I'm not going to put it in your head. But if you believe that recipe is special, is holy, is pure, then when you tap into that at the beginning of the day, you're having a different day. And, you know, don't let anybody ever tell us that what we do is impure. It's impure not by virtue of what we're doing. There are very few things in this world that you could do that are inherently impure. What would be the ultimate inherently impure thing to do? If you think about what Tuma and Tara is. Right, to kill somebody. But if you're in the army and you're putting your life in danger to stop a terrorist from killing people, that's an inherently pure thing to do, even though you're about to become Tamei Avi Avotah Tuma. Right? Tuma in its manifest form. Because if your ratzon is a gift from Hashem, and if you're recognizing that whatever it is you want to do, if you want to do it for the right reasons, that's as pure as it gets, you will live every moment as part of a completely different life. Atavri atava, tayatzatava, tan, right? All the things, you created this. In other words, if I tap into the ratzon as it's meant to be, then it's not something I came up with. It's something I've been given. That's one of the ways you know that you're tapping into what you really should want. When you really get down to it and you know that it's from somewhere that you can't understand. If you're going to law school because your dad wanted you to go to law school, it's not your ratzon. When you get to that realization, it may be difficult, it may be challenging, it may be painful, right? I mean, let's take an extreme example. You meet some girl, everybody says you should marry her. And you kind of get roped into it, and now you get engaged, everybody makes a big party, and at a certain point you realize there's something wrong here, I'm not happy. And then you realize you're not marrying because you want to marry, you're marrying because everybody's telling you she's the right girl for you. It's not your ratzon, it's their ratzon. That's the wrong reason to get married. You might decide not to break it up, you might decide to go through a process and discover whether it could be your ratzon. That's a different question. Right? And that's what that is all about. And one day, I'm not going to have the ability to realize my ratzon in this world. Hamachazir neshamot lifgarim metim. That's what the bracha says. What does that mean? Hamachazir neshamot lifgarim metim. First of all, literally, what does that mean? Translate it. Hamachazir neshamot. Notice how it's plural now. What?
Return souls to
dead carcasses, actually. A goof is a body, a peger is a carcass. In other words, what makes me a carcass as opposed to a human being? Pardon? The neshama. So if I have no ratzon, and one way of understanding sleep is, my ratzon becomes passive. Right? You can't fulfill ratzon when you're in a state of sleep. Agreed? You know, you might dream about what your ratzon is, but you can't fulfill ratzon. When you can't fulfill ratzon, that's called death. You're a peger. And that will happen one day. One day we will go back to being pure ratzon. The ratzon doesn't die. The ability to impact the physical world is what is gone. Right? By the way, that's what mechaye metim means. How are you mechaye metim? This is one level of many levels. When you give realization to the ratzon, to the will of a person who no longer can do that in the physical world. So for example, if you're learning Torah in memory of someone in your life, what you're really doing is you're saying their ratzon still makes a difference. Right? And so on and so forth. Does that make sense? That's the bracha of Elokei Neshama. Just to cap this off. Okay, so you sit in the day, and this is the time to ask yourself, like, what do I want? Is what I want today still what I wanted yesterday? And I'll give you one last extreme example just to make this practical. So you're sitting in the yeshiva, and it's the second week of Elul. And you wake up one day, and you're like, okay, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing here. What am I doing here? Like, everybody's around me learning, they're all excited, and I'm not. What's really going on there? You're struggling with your ratzon. So I would say, okay, so that's what Elokei Neshama. Right, you gave me ratzon. What is my ratzon? And why is my ratzon? I'm not sure everybody's meant to sit in a 3-star midday yeshiva. And if a person isn't meant to be there, and he doesn't find a will and a wanting to be there, then he'd be better off somewhere else. Not because, I don't know, because like we don't want him in Gemara Shir. Because that neshama was given a different ratzon. You can decide you want to have a ratzon. That's already a ratzon. At its root, there will be a mystery. And there definitely are people sometimes they come through a raita. There are definitely people who, they never get that ratzon. They never are able to get to the space, even if they don't want to, whatever, let's say learning is an example, even if they don't want to learn, where they want to learn. Now imagine a person went through a whole year here, and he never really wanted to learn, and he never wanted to want to learn. Right? And he's just going through the routine because he's got nothing better to do. So he's dying inside. He's losing one of the most precious gifts of life, which is time. A year of his life. Suppose that person left yeshiva in the middle of the year and he decided what his passion was Israel advocacy. I don't know. Now, you could debate, like, whether I think that's the ideal passion for a boy after a year of yeshiva high school, you know, you could debate that. It doesn't matter. That's what he feels. And let's say he goes and he finds himself a job, I don't know, the prime minister's office, and that's what he does. He studies Israel advocacy and he goes back to campus and he really makes a difference in the world. Who am I to say what's better? I can tell you one thing for sure. It would be better to do that than to sit in yeshiva and get nothing out of it and finish your year so excited it's finally over. You can finally breathe because nobody's telling you what to do. That's depressing. And by the way, why is that depressing? Because you realize you just spent a year and you didn't access your purpose, which is what Simcha is all about. So when do you have time to think about these things? That's Elokei Neshama. So if you're on fire and you know what you want, Elokei Neshama takes a minute. If you're struggling with a question, I remember when I was offered this job once to do birthright follow-up, but we were talking about starting a raita, and I was really struggling. And I remember one day I went for a walk and I was thinking about Elokei Neshama and whatever. There's a niggun that I learned from a mentor of mine, Chazar Sherwood Goffin. Beautiful tune to Elokei Neshama. And I went for a walk in the woods and just for like a half an hour. Because I just needed to struggle with that question. Right? So that's a little food for thought. It's interesting, by the way, that these brachot, even though we have the custom to say them in shul, there's no obligation to say them in shul. One does not need a minyan. Right? So if you feel that you're more able to do this, you want to do an experiment one day? Get here a little earlier. Go up on the roof. And Elokai Neshama up on the roof, overlooking Harabai. It's a different experience. And one day you'll be sitting in college, wherever, and you'll be saying, I had a year where I could just go up on that roof and Elokai Neshama, and I missed it. All right, I'll go back for alumni week. Mm-hmm. Right? Food for thought? Any questions? Yes?
You said on
something the Chameya team is like resurrecting someone's like will. That's what you said.
That's one aspect of it.
So like, what if someone like didn't want that? Say someone, hey, like, let's say you wanted to learn for someone. I give like two examples. Like you wanted to learn for someone and like they really hated learning and they hated God.
Oh, or that is a really good question. That's a really good question. Does a person, do you say that whatever a person wanted in this world, that's what they want in the next world, whatever that means? Or do you say that when a person leaves this world, they all of a sudden discover and met? So I'll tell you what I believe. When I get there, I'll let you know, right? But this is how I look at it. I think that there, you can split those areas into two categories. The things that Judaism, the Torah, Hashem clearly tells us, right? Look, let's take an extreme example. Let's say a person was a gigolo. And he just fooled around a lot and slept with lots of different women, never had a relationship. And one day you said to him, like, you know, don't you, I mean, I would never say this to a person, but let's say you did. You know, don't you want to get married? No, I don't want to get married. I don't have children. I just want to party. Okay. Now he's gone. So the Torah says, a person has a mitzvah, peruvu, a person should want to have children as well. Right? So I believe that that neshama arrives at a realization that there was something that they could have wanted in this world. And I believe that if somehow you, like, for example, if you name a child after that person, right, if you decide to, you can debate that, that's a tremendous mitzvah, because now that person is pure etzon and realizes now they're seeing a reality as we can't see it in this world. That's one way of looking at it, right? On the other hand, if a person, you know, his parents wanted him to play ball because he was 6'9 and he hated basketball, there's no reason a person has to want to play basketball. So there's no reason to assume that that retzon now acquires the retzon for basketball. Basketball anyway is not a retzon. Basketball is a vehicle to a retzon. Make sense? Cool.
Also, you know, follow up. What if like it's something totally different? Like let's say there's like a Palestinian terrorist who like doesn't know the name of like Muhammad, and like Muhammad never wanted that, and like now people think that's like what Muhammad wanted. Would that also be asked of the Mazdaib team?
Oh, so that's really the same example when you think about it. If a terrorist, look, I struggle with this a lot after Sparrows, after I was in a suicide bombing. Because the guy who walked into Sparrows and blew himself up screamed, Allahu Akbar, God is great, before he blew himself and, you know, 15 other people to pieces. And I have to agree with him. I do think God is great. So how could a person do that? How could a person, realize this person reached a relationship with God. And we, by the way, believe that Islam is not Avodah Zarah. It's not idolatry. They have the same God we do, and they just have a different relationship with him, right? So how do you relate to that? Like, you know, if a person has such a deep relationship with God that they're willing to die for God, how could that type of relationship lead to such a heinous act? So the way I understand that is Rav Kook. Rav Kook has a magnificent article. It's called Mimrakei Emunah, Pollutions of Faith. And basically what he says is all the stuff, all the baggage a person has in life stems from their relationship with Hashem. If you have a clean, healthy relationship with Hashem, then you'll live a clean, healthy life. So when a person has that warped a perception, that he can do such warped things, what that really means is he has a warped relationship with Hashem. The God that he believes in isn't really what God is. God is not waiting for you in heaven to give you 72 physical versions. You know, they found bodies of suicide bombers with like metal pieces around their genitals because they want to protect them so that in the afterlife they can sleep with 72 versions. So that's ridiculous, right? At least from a Jewish perspective. I know that's not PC to call somebody else's faith ridiculous, but I'm going to allow myself that option in this moment, right? So I think that a person discovers the reality. By the way, Judaism does not believe in purgatory either. We don't believe that the souls of terrorists and Nazis and whatever else are stoking the fires of hell, right? We just think that when a person leaves this world, they somehow come into contact with the reality of who they could have been and who they were. And that to the degree that those two realities, who I really was in this world and who I could have been, are disparate, to the degree that there's distance between the two, that is some sort of spiritual pain. It's painful to experience that. It's like if you say something accidentally at the table and you just realize you really hurt somebody you love, you embarrass them, whatever, that's painful. Why is that so painful? Because there's disparity between who I know I want to be and who I just behaved like. And that's a healthy disparity. Does that make sense? All right, we'll stop here, Bosai. Please learn for the Refuah Shlemah of Chaya Esther Batzara.